That's the last track on a new release. The piece is called To Sing Forever, and the release is Orpheus Down by composer Ian Wilson. Welcome to Relevant Tones. I'm Seth Bosted, and Ian is my guest. Ian, thanks so much for being on the program today.
Thanks for having me, Seth. Delighted to be here.
This is such a cool project, and it sounds like it's a theme that you've been thinking about for a long time. Can you describe the project for me?
Well, the project came about through a connection with the bass clarinetist Gareth Davis. Gareth and I had been in touch for many years. In fact, neither of us can really remember who instigated or how it came about, but it seems we were in touch every year or two, say hi, shall we do something? And eventually Gareth said, this is about 7 years ago, he says, listen, why don't you write me a solo? I have this ongoing project called Standards. I'm asking composers to pick their favorite jazz standard and kind of do their own thing on it. So I asked my wife to think of something, and she liked the Nina Simone version of Wild is the Wind. So I made a version of that for Gareth, and he played that at the Gaudeamus Festival in the Netherlands in 2018. And then we were continuing to do our every year or two, well, what do we do now, that kind of thing. And then he said, well, listen, why don't you write me a big piece with my for me and my friend Dario, who plays double bass, and then we can just, we can make that the program, just the one piece program. And I was really excited about this actually, because Dario, like Gareth, is a fabulous player, and the combination of double bass and bass clarinet just was very, very intriguing and enticing. And I must say, I was a little apprehensive because, obviously I write a lot of music, but not always, in fact, rarely enough for people who are only in the contemporary music scene. So this was a challenge, and I wanted to really push myself to meet that challenge compositionally, conceptually, everything. So yeah, I had to get the right concept. Obviously, these two deep, dark, low instruments immediately just made me think of something deep. The depths, and then the Orpheus myth sprang to mind. And this was also during COVID, so I don't want to read too much into that because, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast, let alone what I was thinking 2 or 3 years ago. But it seemed that this idea of losing loved ones was very much in the air all around us. And I suppose it was partly that too, which just made the Orpheus story very, seemed very necessary for this piece, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, that all makes sense, of course. I mean, especially, working with bass clarinet and double bass, both of which are low, but they're also very rich in overtones. The sound spectrum is rich is the only word I can think of for it, really.
That's right, and obviously a huge range too. Those guys can play really high. And we had a nice start to the project because, I sorted out the structure pretty early on. But then I really wanted to see what the possibilities were. And so I wrote some just written descriptions of what I would like them to play. And they sent me a very nice video of the pair of them just responding in the moment to what I'd asked them to play. And that was a very good basis for the rest of the piece. I mean, I maybe took 5% of their ideas and thought, yeah, I can use that. But to see them work together, playing together, very, very helpful for the beginning of the project.
Yeah, did you get to, I mean, did you work this out in real time with them? Were you sending the music and they were able to send you back recordings of themselves? It was, we were doing a lot of that during COVID. So just out of curiosity if that's how you worked as well.
Well, that's how we worked in the beginning. But once they gave me that initial recording, I had enough material to run with and get the piece written. And then we had agreed in advance that the guys would go into the studio and record the whole thing. And the idea of that was that we would use it as some kind of promo device to arrange performances. But in the end, actually, the recording was so good. And actually, when there's a sound engineer I work with a lot, So he and I worked on it a bit too in terms of the mixing and stuff. And so we're very pleased with how that turned out. And really, I had organized a few dates for the guys to play in Ireland just recently in April past there, and we did the CD launch at the same time. So it all kind of came together for that. And with those dates coming up, I thought, well, let's just get this out on CD and digital download, of course. And there's an Irish label called Farpoint, which the albums come out on. And the guys that run that, Anthony and David, they're really, really supportive, very enthusiastic. And they said, yeah, we can make this happen.
Yeah, that's great. That's amazing. Obviously, with Orpheus, there's the story of the underworld, but he's such a complex figure as well. I mean, you know, a very musical figure, right? And I'm curious if there was any part of the wider Orphic myth that inspired you as well, or did you stick pretty closely to just going down to the underworld and you know, coming back without, unfortunately, without being able to bring Eurydice with him?
Yeah, I stuck fairly closely to the main thrust of the story because, you know, it provides a good architecture for the music. I think it's only when you're working with text that you can really start to do something fancy. In fact, I had looked, there's a very good Scottish poet, Carolan Duffy, and she has a poem called Eurydice, which looks at the whole Orpheus Eurydice story from a feminist point of view. It's kind of funny, but also right between the eyes, and it basically turns everything upside down. And I had been thinking about making a choir piece out of that, but unfortunately, it just proved impossible to get the rights. So that would have been a way to go with something with text, but just for the musical architecture itself, I found the original myth very, very useful, very solid. And then, you know, it gave me a bit of freedom to work around that, I suppose. In the penultimate movement, The Losing Again, for instance, I just had this notion of Orpheus replaying in his mind over and over and over again that moment where he looks back and thinking, what did I do? Why did I do that? And so it becomes an incredibly repetitive little movement, just this notion of not being able to get away from that in your mind. So, excuse me, give me, you know, some options to do kind of fun things musically, still be bedded down to the architecture. And then, as I'm sure you know, Seth, the story has a few different endings depending on who you read. But I particularly liked the ending where Orpheus is ripped to pieces by the Minotaurs, but his head floats off down the Mediterranean to Lesbos, still singing. I thought, well, that's a nice way to finish.
Yes, indeed. As you look at the movements, I mean, the story is there in the titles of the movements,
yeah,
which I really like. And we opened up with To Sing Forever, so we kind of are working our way backwards here. We opened up with that image you just talked about, in a way. So let's talk about some of the individual movements. Morning Song, you know, we know what's happening in the story there, but how did you approach that instrumentally?
Well, A lot of the essential ideas came from the improvisations that Gareth and Dario did in response to my written suggestions. So, you know, I had this image of Orpheus, mournful in the rain. Wanted to know how the guys would respond to that, and also I had found a fragment of a very old Greek melody. So that's the thing that you hear at the start and at the end of the piece, rather than wanting to write something myself, which I could have done obviously, but I like using found objects when I can, and this Greek melody was a very useful found object. So Gareth starts off playing little snippets of that, just two or three note snatches. Meanwhile, then Gareth started to improvise in their original response, just tapping near the bridge of the instrument with his bow. And it was a very lovely little atmosphere he was making. So that's basically what I took from that. I have Gareth playing these little snatches of melody, lots of breath, you know, very atmospheric feeling the wind, feeling the trees, whatever, and just then this tapping, like the rain falling. So I'm trying to paint a picture of something beginning, where we're starting from, and that's the point. I mean, you could have started earlier, I suppose, but you've got to start somewhere. So that seemed to be the ideal place to start with, where, you know, Orpheus is bereft and he's decided to make the journey.
I love your description of morning song. Let's keep going with the movements. Let's start to go down to the underworld now. Can you talk about how you've handled musically the crossing and descent?
Well, the crossing was built from one or two main ideas I had asked in my little written description to the guys to respond to. This notion of a creaking oar, you know, Charon crossing the Styx in his boat. I'm not sure what people normally think about that, but, you know, a lot of those older types of rowing boats just have one big oar at the back, and you push and pull that, and it's usually tied on by a piece of old rope. So I imagine that creaking, and immediately Dario went to dragging the bow up and down the strings to make that kind of creaking sound, which was lovely. So it's basically built on that, with some very atmospheric sounds and harmonies. And then I also wanted Dario to just hum a little bit, like, you know, Charon does all the time. Just because it's Orpheus, it's no big deal. He's humming as he's ferrying the passenger. He does this all the time. So something casual coming in there towards the end of the movement. And yeah, that's a couple of elements. It's really the maximum, I think, that's necessary to create a little mood piece, which this really is.
Thank you.
Descent, then, as the title suggests, is really this idea of just going down, whether it's step, it must have been steps, I suppose, the idea of steps down to Hades. And I'm sure you know the Salvatore Sciarrino piece, Vanitas, which is a really beautiful and strange song cycle for piano, cello, and soprano voice. And the last movement of that, I used to run a new music festival in the west of Ireland called the Sligo New Music Festival. And the very first festival I did was a feature on Sciarrino. And we had an Italian group come over. And anyway, they played Vanitas for us. And towards the end, the cello just does this very, very, very slow glissando on the lowest string, I think it is. And I remember the first time I heard this, he started, and I thought, oh God, you're not serious. You're just gonna go down the glissando like that. So like 5 minutes. And yet it's so full of tension. And so I wanted to do something like that, but this time the glissando and the double bass, it's much more energized and activated. So it's the same idea. He's a long glissando, but he's adding a lot to it in terms of rebowing and harmonics and extra trills on a double stop and that kind of thing. But basically that's the core of the piece, just this long glissando, while then the bass clarinet over the top tries to create some kind of descending melody, which now and again will harmonize with the double bass line for a moment and then just disappear again. So again, a very simple idea, but yeah, very effective actually for me, that one.
Okay, passing ghosts. These, I assume, are the ghosts or the shades, as they say in Hades, that he runs into. So that's an intriguing idea to handle musically. How did you go about that?
Well, it's just this idea of, again, atmosphere. Those low clarinets are fabulous for producing multiphonics and all sorts of high overtones. So atmosphere is a given there. It's just a matter of trying to control it, actually. So, I mean, there are bits of improv throughout the piece, but it's usually pretty controlled. I want to give the musicians agency, but I don't want to let them off the leash, if you know what I mean. So it's a matter of really controlling what they can do or what they're what you know, if you give them too much freedom, then they kind of rock out, if you like, and it just gets away from where you want to be. So very controlled improvisations. But at the same time, I might say just, pick a multiphonic and that kind of thing. But I did notate a lot of that kind of stuff there, actually, because I was quite specific about what I wanted. But yeah, very much an atmosphere piece. I was very conscious of trying to explore the full range of what was on offer with the two instruments in combination and soloistically. So if I'd done something earlier on, and an idea comes along that feels like it calls for the same thing, then I really try and resist that and find a different way to do it. But at the same time, when the seventh movement comes along in Treaty, and which is really where in the relevant point in the myth where Orpheus is singing to the king of the underworld, to the ruler of the underworld, to release Eurydice, this felt to me actually like finally a moment where the double bass could sing with pizzicato. I mean, I love Pitt's double bass almost more than anything else, you know, but it's something that I feel it's worth waiting for in a piece like this. So while there may have been little bits of Pitt's up to there, although very, very little, this is the first point, and we're, you know, over halfway through the piece. This is the first point where it really comes to the fore and sings, and it's such a gorgeous sound. And then, you know, for the next movement towards the light, this was probably the first opportunity to have really low chords in both instruments. Well, it was big heavy chords in the bass, and then with the clarinet doing these very slow, low melody over the top of it. And this was just this idea of struggling to get out of Hades towards the light, up the hill, slow process, you know, hard work and just heavy, everything heavy and beautifully low sound, so low that you have to listen carefully to pick out the separate notes, but it gives a beautiful texture.
Thank you.
think we've talked about, which is the losing again.
Yeah, well, this is this weird movement in a way. It's just like I was saying earlier, this idea of replay, of Orpheus replaying over and over in his head, why did I do that? Why did I look back? You know, I lost her again. How bad does he feel? Can he get away? Can he forgive himself? And just this notion of the thing happening, just obsessing about that. So it's this little like 45, 50 second idea was just repeated 5 or 6 times. And interestingly, in concert, the guys would change every repetition a bit, especially Dario. Dario would find many lovely ways to play the same thing, which was great. But it's just a bit of something frantic, and then something slower, and then some lovely little chords. But in the middle there is naughtily, perhaps, the opening of Stravinsky's ballet, Orpheus, you know, those descending scales, which for me is the most beautiful thing in all of Stravinsky's music. Just that opening, the rest of the thing I can actually live without, but that opening is, for me, the most beautiful thing he ever wrote. So I wanted a little nod to Stravinsky by including that little scale in this passage. And so basically, the movement exhausts itself in its obsessiveness.
I really appreciate your taking the time to chat with me. Congratulations on this awesome project.
Likewise, and thank you so much, Seth. Really appreciate the positivity. It's always very encouraging.
Great. Yeah, congrats on this. It really is a great project.
Thank you. Relevant Tones is a production of Access Contemporary Music, a nonprofit organization with the mission of providing equitable access to the transformative power of music making. Find out more at acmusic.org. On behalf of Relevant Tones, I'm Seth Bosted. Thanks so much for listening.